From New York, this is Democracy Now!
These trucks are not just trucks. They are a lifeline. They are the difference between life and death for so many people in Gaza.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has traveled to the Egyptian side of the Rafah border crossing to urge Israel to allow trucks carrying humanitarian aid into Gaza, where the death toll from Israel's two-week bombardment has topped 4,100. As President Biden seeks $74 billion for Israel and Ukraine, we'll speak to Palestinian analyst Tarek Bakoni, author of Hamas Contained, The Rise and Pacification of Palestinian Resistance. Then we continue our conversation with the legendary Israeli journalist Amira Haas, who's reported from the occupied West Bank and Gaza for over 30 years.
The Israeli right wing and the messianic religious settler right wing has been always pushing for wars and regional wars, because in order to achieve the grand plan of repeating and completing 1948, the Nakba.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Palestinian health officials in the Gaza Strip say the death toll from 2 weeks of unrelenting Israeli attacks has topped 4,100, with over 13,000 wounded. More than 1,000 Gaza residents remain missing, many of them under the rubble of collapsed homes. In one overnight incident, the St. Porphyrius Greek Orthodox Church in Gaza City, which was sheltering hundreds of displaced Palestinians, was struck by an apparent Israeli airstrike. Gaza officials say 18 Christian Palestinians were killed. Part of the 12th century structure, one of the oldest churches in the world, was reduced to rubble. This is a survivor.
They came here to escape the airstrikes and the destruction. They thought they were safe here. The destruction followed them. The destruction followed them, Biden. Biden, you are giving all your support to Israel to kill the civilians.
Gaza's hospitals are on the brink of collapse, with shortages of fuel, electricity and critical medical supplies. Doctors at Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis have resorted to using vinegar to treat infected wounds. According to Gaza's Ministry of Housing, at least 30% of the territory's housing units have been destroyed, rendered uninhabitable or damaged. This is Asma Sabah, whose family has been forced to move to a makeshift tent city in Khan Yunis.
We now live like our ancestors in 1948. We are displaced from our homes. Just like their reality, we live in tents. We left our homes to stay in tents, just like our ancestors. We never expected to be here. Oh world, have mercy on us. We want a truce. We are tired. What does Israel want from us? We are displaced from our homes. What more do they want?
Earlier today, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres arrived at the Egyptian side of the Rafah border crossing to Gaza, where a humanitarian aid convoy remains stuck Friday, despite a deal to allow the passage of the first 20 trucks. Guterres urged Israeli and Egyptian officials to open the crossing as soon as possible to allow food, water, medicine and fuel to be delivered at scale, calling it the difference between life or death for so many people. In the occupied West Bank, the Palestinian Health Ministry says 13 people were killed Thursday as Israeli forces bombed and raided the Nur Shams refugee camp. Seven of those kills were children, two of them just 10 years old. Meanwhile, human rights groups report heavily armed Israelis from illegal settlements, sometimes backed by Israeli soldiers, have increasingly forced Palestinian Bedouin villagers from their West Bank homes, seizing the properties. On Thursday, Israel's defense minister, Yoav Gallant, told soldiers massed near the Gaza border they would soon see the territory from the inside, suggesting a ground invasion is imminent.
There can be no forgiveness, only total annihilation of the Hamas organization, its terror infrastructures, everything that has to do with terrorists and whoever sent them. It will take a week, it will take a month, it will take 2 months until we eliminate them. You are not alone in battle.
President Biden set to deliver a request to Congress for an additional $100 billion in funding to aid U.S. allies and to further militarize the U.S.-Mexico border. Reuters reports the request includes $60 billion for Ukraine, $14 billion for Israel, another $14 billion for so-called border security. Biden made the case for the extraordinary foreign aid package during a primetime address from the Oval Office Thursday.
We're facing an inflection point in history One of those moments where the decisions we make today are going to determine the future for decades to come.
Biden's remarks came after more than 400 congressional staffers signed a joint letter urging Congress to back a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. The staffers write, quote, "We've appreciated seeing nearly every member of Congress express quick and unequivocal solidarity with the Israeli people, but we are profoundly disturbed that such shows of humanity have barely been extended to the Palestinian people," unquote. Chinese President Xi Jinping has called for a ceasefire in Gaza to allow humanitarian aid into the besieged Palestinian territory. His first public remarks on the conflict came as he met Egypt's prime minister in Beijing Thursday. The Pentagon says it's thwarted a series of drone attacks aimed at bases housing U.S. forces in Iraq and Syria. A Pentagon spokesperson said Thursday the U.S. will respond to the attacks at a time and manner of its choosing after several troops were injured. The Pentagon also said a U.S. Navy warship in the Red Sea intercepted missiles fired by Houthi rebels in Yemen toward Israel. On Thursday, the governments of the United States, United Kingdom, and Germany advised their citizens to leave Lebanon immediately as fears grow that Israel's assault on Gaza will lead to a wider war across the Middle East. British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak traveled to Saudi Arabia Thursday for talks with Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and other top Saudi officials. Sunak's office said the leaders agreed to work to prevent any further escalation of the war in Gaza. Sunak's visit to Riyadh came a day after he met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Jerusalem, where Sunak pledged UK support for Israel's military campaign in Gaza. Sunak is traveling to Egypt today for talks with President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. Thousands of protesters rallied in Paris, France, Thursday to demand a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. The protests came only after officials granted permission following a week-long ban on pro-Palestine protests in France. These two protesters spoke with France 24 television.
We're here to show our support for the Palestinian people. It's been 75 years of colonization, and they're fighting for their right to independence and self-determination. We're here to show them that we haven't forgotten them.
We see pro-Israeli demonstrations going on without any problems, with political leaders at their head. But when you try to defend Palestine, that's forbidden.
In Pakistan, hundreds of protesters rallied in the capital, Islamabad, Thursday for a Palestinian solidarity march. This is Pakistani gender equality and human rights activist Tahir Abdullah.
Instead of a two-state solution, we are now going towards a one-state solution, and that one state is only Israel. Where is Palestine? Should the Palestinians jump into the sea? Where should they go? There is nowhere for them. Gaza was a tiny little strip, and Israel has kicked them out of Gaza. And they want them to go into Egypt so that Israel can occupy Gaza also. We absolutely protest against this. We demand that the United Nations should do something finally after 75 years of absolutely useless resolutions.
Pro-Palestine demonstrations have also continued in Lebanon, Jordan, Egypt, Algeria, Tunisia, and across the Middle East and North Africa. In Haiti, a former Justice Ministry official and key suspect in the assassination of Haitian President Jovenel Moïse 2 years ago was arrested Thursday. Joseph Félix Baggio emerged as a prime suspect after a team of Colombian hitmen arrested just hours after Moïse's killing told Haitian authorities they'd received the order from Baggio. Here in the United States, far-right Ohio Congress member Jim Jordan said Thursday he would suspend his bid to become Speaker of the House, only to reverse course after emerging from a tense hours-long meeting with the Republican conference.
I'm still running for Speaker, and I plan to go to the floor and get the votes and win this race. But I want to go talk with a few of my colleagues. Particularly, I want to talk with the 20 individuals who voted against me so that we can move forward and begin to work for the American people.
Jordan's U-turn came after Republicans failed to agree to a plan that would have empowered Speaker Pro Tem Patrick McHenry to perform all the functions of House Speaker until January. The House remains at a legislative standstill 16 days after far-right Florida Republican Matt Gaetz led a successful effort to oust Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Sidney Powell, Donald Trump's former lawyer, one of his 18 co-defendants in Georgia's sweeping racketeering case, has pleaded guilty to attempting to overturn the 2020 election results.
And are you pleading guilty today because you agree that there is a sufficient factual basis, that there are enough facts that support this plea of guilty?
I do.
Powell Powell was sentenced to 6 years of probation and fined $6,000. She will also pay $2,700 in restitution to the state of Georgia and write an apology letter to Georgia residents. As part of her deal, Sidney Powell has agreed to cooperate with prosecutors and could become a key witness against Trump. In 2020, Powell famously vowed to, quote, release the Kraken, a mythical sea monster, to help overturn Trump's election loss, and filed a litany of baseless lawsuits. In California, interim Senator LaFonza Butler said Thursday she will not run for the U.S. Senate next year. Governor Gavin Newsom selected Butler, then president of Emily's List, to fill the seat left open after the passing of Dianne Feinstein last month. The high-profile Senate race includes Congressmembers Barbara Lee, Adam Schiff, and Katie Porter. In Virginia, the hotel hosting Saturday's annual banquet of CARE, that's the Council on American-Islamic Relations, canceled the event after receiving violent threats. CARE said anti-Muslim and anti-Palestinian extremists issued death and bomb threats against the Crystal Gateway Marriott Hotel. The event's being relocated with additional security. CARE said in a statement, quote, "We will not allow the threats of anti-Palestinian racists and anti-Muslim bigots who seek to dehumanize the Palestinian people and silence American Muslims to stop us from pursuing justice for all," they said. And in San Diego, a federal judge again ruled a California law banning assault weapons such as AR-15 rifles was unconstitutional. In 2021, the same judge, Roger Benitez, overturned California's 32-year-old ban on assault weapons. California's Democratic Attorney General Rob Bonta vowed to appeal the, quote, dangerous and misguided ruling. Bonta added, quote, weapons of war have no place on California's streets. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, we speak with Palestinian analyst Tarek Bakoni. His piece for the New York Review of Books, Gaza Without Pretenses. For years, Israel and Hamas maintained an unstable equilibrium that kept the Gaza Strip contained, but it was always likely to be temporary. Back in 20 seconds.
I'm exhausted. Last night I couldn't sleep, but when I did, I could hear bombs in my dreams. Nightmare situation. How could they be so evil, making mortars out of children and innocent people? We expect the bombs, not knowing where next. Huddle in the corner of my room, trying to protect my little brother as the building shakes like it's possessed, but nothing stronger than the will of the oppressed. I bomb back with my lyrics and rhymes, living the times, trying to break the Palestinian minds. What's hiding in the clouds hanging over my head? My dad risks his life outside to buy bread. The fourth war in my 12th year at this stage. I'm numb, though I haven't feel scared.
There's Shouting at the Wall by MC Abdul, a 15-year-old Palestinian rapper. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The death toll in Gaza from Israel's 14-day bombardment has topped 4,100 as Israel continues to block food, water, and fuel from entering the besieged territory. Over 13,000 Palestinians have been injured over the past 2 weeks. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres traveled today to the Egyptian side of the Rafah border crossing to Gaza to demand humanitarian aid convoys be allowed entry.
These trucks are not just trucks. They are a lifeline. They are the difference between life and death for so many people in Gaza.
Guterres said the UN is actively engaging with Israel and Egypt to get the aid trucks into Gaza. The BBC is reporting Hamas has offered to release some of the hostages it seized during its attack on October 7th in exchange for a ceasefire, but Israel has rejected the deal. Earlier today, the Israeli military said it believes the majority of the 200 hostages seized are still alive. Israel's defense minister hinted Thursday a ground invasion of Gaza is imminent, telling troops they will soon see Gaza, quote, from inside. Israel's ramping up its crackdown on the occupied West Bank. Israeli forces killed 13 Palestinians in a raid on the Nur Shams refugee camp near the city of Tul Karm. In recent days, Israel's also detained 750 Palestinians, including lawmakers and journalists. On Thursday night, President Biden gave a primetime speech from the Oval Office calling for Congress to approve $14 billion for Israel, another $60 billion for Ukraine, and some for Taiwan. This comes as HuffPost is reporting there's a, quote, mutiny brewing inside the State Department over Biden's policy on Israel. Joining us now in New York is Tariq Bokhony, Palestinian analyst and writer, president of the board of Al-Shabaka, the Palestinian Policy Network, and former senior analyst for the International Crisis Group on Israel-Palestine. His recent piece for the New York Review is headlined Gaza Without Pretenses. For years, Israel and Hamas maintained an unstable equilibrium that kept the Gaza Strip contained, but it was always likely to be temporary. Tariq is author of the book Hamas Contained, The Rise and Pacification of Palestinian Resistance. Tariq, welcome back to Democracy Now! Before we go to the history of Hamas, I wanted to ask you about the current situation, the latest that we hear. The looks like a ground invasion is imminent. The Rafah border is still closed, although there had been a deal to allow in 20 trucks of aid coming from Egypt into Gaza, though those inside medical groups are saying even 100 trucks a day wouldn't quite deal with the crisis and the need inside.
Well, Amy, yes, the situation in the Gaza Strip is quite dire. What we see today is really a continuation of efforts by Israel to place the Gaza Strip under a complete blockade. And this has been ongoing for about 16 years now. And then after the offensive by Hamas on the 7th of October, Israel placed the Gaza Strip under what it called a total siege. What this means is that it's prevented the entry of water, fuel, electricity, and medicine into the Gaza Strip. Now, this is a form of collective punishment. We have to understand the Gaza Strip has about 2.3 million Palestinians. About two-thirds of them are refugees from homes in what is now Israel, and about half of that are minors and children. This is a form of collective punishment and is essentially reliant on a total dehumanization of Palestinians in Gaza. What we're seeing happening at the moment is that humanitarian aid is being politicized, that humanitarian aid to the civilian population in Gaza is linked to political goals, and any form of effort to try to de-escalate is being blocked by the U.S. The fact that the U.S. vetoed the U.N. Security Council resolution yesterday is an indication of its willingness to allow Israel to continue both its bombardment of the Gaza Strip as well as the strangulation of Gaza civilian population through the blocking of entry of humanitarian aid.
And explain what that resolution was that the U.S. rejected.
Well, it was a resolution that was tabled by Brazil, and it called for an immediate de-escalation and a ceasefire. It was a humanitarian ceasefire, which meant that the bombardment from the Israeli authorities would have to cease and allow for humanitarian aid to come into the Gaza Strip and for the restrictions to be eased. However, we see that this continues to, first of all, the U.S. blocked the resolution. And then when there were agreements to have, as you said, 20 truckloads to enter the Gaza Strip, which is far less than the minimum that would be required to sustain Gaza's civilian population, there are still obstacles to the entry of those trucks. We also have to understand that Gaza's population has been forced by Israeli authorities to evacuate the majority of the northern parts of the strip. This has resulted in a forced displacement of about the orders was for the forced displacement of 1.1 million Palestinians. Now, the Gaza Strip is one of the most densely populated strips of land in the world. Any form of evacuation is really impossible. There's nowhere for our Palestinians to leave. What that means is that any kind of bombardment that the Israeli authorities are carrying out in the Gaza Strip are killing Palestinians in their thousands. And unlike in previous military assaults, here Israel is actually quite explicit about wanting to target civilian infrastructure, ambulances, healthcare centers, clinics, and the bombing is indiscriminate, as Palestinians in Gaza are reporting, by intent.
This is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu speaking Tuesday about Hamas.
This is a part of an axis of evil of Iran and Hezbollah and Hamas. Their goal, open goal, is to eradicate the state of Israel. The open goal of Hamas is to kill as many Jews as they could, and the only difference is they would have killed every last one of us, murdered every last one of us, if they could. They just don't have the capacity, but they murdered an extraordinary 1,300 civilians, which in American terms, is like many, many, many 9/11s.
That's Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Tarek Bakoni, you wrote the book Hamas Contained. Can you respond?
Well, I mean, this language that the Israelis and the American officials have been using to demonize Hamas has been entirely based in the effort to depoliticize the Palestinian struggle and to present any form of armed resistance against what is a violent apartheid regime as a form of terrorism. The impact of this is really to try to give Israel a carte blanche to continue dealing with the question of Palestine, with the quest by the Palestinian people to gain their inalienable rights through force and through a security doctrine. The President Biden's linking of the attack that happened on 7th October to 9/11 is really a carte blanche for Israel to do what it wants to in the Gaza Strip. And it's an affirmation that all the lessons that have been learned after Israel's, after the, America's own 9/11 have really been lost. Now, this language isn't new. Successive Israeli governments have linked Palestinian resistance generally and Hamas specifically to 9/11 and to terrorism, and has used that link in order to reinforce and reentrench its occupation. What we have to understand here is that this isn't an effort to try to quell to destroy Hamas specifically. This is an effort to pursue an ethnic cleansing campaign in the Gaza Strip and beyond the Gaza Strip as we see the violence rising in the West Bank. The effort to link Hamas to Hamas's attack to 9/11 is really to give cover to pursue genocidal tendencies that the Israeli political establishment has articulated long before October 7th.
So the Israeli military, also Biden, very much bonded, sort of bound to this analysis as well, talks about the Hamas attack on October 7th, killing over 1,300 Israelis. Over 200 are being held by Hamas. Looks like the majority of them, according to the Israeli government, are still alive. The Israeli government says Hamas uses civilians as human shields. And in this comment of the Israeli military saying they've given a green light to move, to move into Gaza whenever it's ready, the economy minister, Nir Barakat, said in an interview with ABC News, concerns over hostages and civilian casualties will be secondary to destroying Hamas. Were you surprised by the October 7th attack? And talk about what Israel is saying right now and, of course, what's happening in Gaza.
Well, the 7th of October attack was certainly surprising for someone like myself, who's been studying Hamas for a long time, but I imagine also for many Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, as well as probably for Hamas's leadership. It was surprising, not in its timing, obviously, and not in the offensive, the nature of the offensive and how it took place, but it was surprising mostly in the scale of it and the ability of Hamas to really penetrate into Israeli-controlled territory around the Gaza Strip and to spend the length of time that fighters, Hamas and otherwise, were able to spend in Israeli towns. You have to understand that for many Palestinians and more broadly, there's a myth of an Israeli invincibility, that Israel is impenetrable, at least from the Gaza Strip, and that its army is unparalleled. And that expectation was probably in the minds of Hamas's leadership when they were planning and staging this attack. And instead of any form of effective defense on the Israeli side, what we saw was a complete shattering of this illusion. We saw the reality that actually Israel's army is not invincible, and that the blockade that is placed around the Gaza Strip is perfectly penetrable, and that Hamas was able to overturn Israel's myth of invincibility very, very quickly. Now, the scale of the attack and the number of hostages that Hamas was able to capture and take back into the Gaza Strip probably exceeded its expectations, which also meant that the retaliation that we now see is also probably far worse than Hamas might have anticipated. Now, that's not to say that Hamas didn't anticipate some form of retaliation, because that has always been, at least in the past 16 years, the equilibrium between Hamas and Israel, that Hamas would try to pressure Israel through rockets or otherwise to lift or ease restrictions on the blockade, because the blockade itself is a form of violence that's strangulating 2 million Palestinians in Gaza, and Israel would respond with disproportionate military force that would result in the deaths of thousands of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Now, the expectation has always been from the Israeli side that this situation is tenable, that it can be sustained, and adopted what it called the military doctrine of mowing the lawn, that it would do this every few years, and then that this equilibrium would be sustained indefinitely. What we saw on the 7th of October was Hamas overturning that equilibrium and saying, actually, you cannot have any kind of calm or security for your citizens as long as your boot remains on our necks. The Palestinians will not acquiesce to their imprisonment silently. So that equilibrium has now shattered.
I wanted to ask you if you could talk about Israel's involvement in Hamas gaining power. In 2009, Avner Cohen, a former Israeli religious affairs official who worked in Gaza for over 20 years, told the Wall Street Journal, quote, "Hamas, to my great regret, is Israel's creation." Another former Israeli official, Brigadier General Yitzhak Segev, said he was given a budget to help finance Islamist movements in Gaza to counter Yasser Arafat and his Fatah movement. Another former Israeli military official, David Chacham, said, quote, "When I look back at the chain of events, I think we made a mistake. But at the time, nobody thought about the possible results." Your response, Tarek Balkhouni?
Well, the origins of that is really Hamas emerged as an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood chapter in the Gaza Strip. And the Muslim Brotherhood chapter was not a political party. It was a social party. And its operations in the Gaza Strip and throughout the Palestinian territories were actually granted licenses by Israeli occupying forces at the time. So there was a license for the Muslim Brotherhood chapter to operate openly in the Gaza Strip. When Hamas was established in 1987 and became a political party and a military party that was engaged in active resistance against Israel's occupation, that the policies within the Israeli government shifted. And obviously, it became less open to allowing Hamas to function. However, that did not deter Israeli authorities from encouraging and promoting divide-and-rule tactics between the Islamist nationalist movement, so Hamas, and secular nationalism around Fatah. And this has always been a tactic that the colonial forces have used globally, and obviously Israeli colonialism is no different. So it has directly and implicitly attempted divide-and-rule policies. This really turned and came to a head in 2007 when Hamas, after winning democratic elections in 2006, rose to power, and the Israeli authorities, along with the U.S., attempted to initiate a regime change operation, which facilitated a civil war between Hamas and Fatah and allowed Hamas to take over the Gaza Strip. Since then, Israeli authorities have actively embrace the idea that Hamas would be accepted as a governing authority in the Gaza Strip. Now, part of the calculus in that is because of Gaza's 2 million Palestinians. This is a demographic issue. Israel wanted to sever the Gaza Strip from the rest of historic Palestine in order to reinforce its claim that it's a Jewish majority state. By getting rid of 2 million Palestinians, two-thirds of whom are refugees demanding return, Israel can claim to be both a Jewish state and a democracy and restructure what is its apartheid regime. Now, in order to do that, it acquiesced to maintaining Hamas in governance, and it claimed that it placed a blockade around the Gaza Strip because Hamas was in power. And obviously, this was bought in the international community using what we were just talking about, the idea that Hamas is a terrorist organization, axis of evil. Of evil, and therefore that this blockade makes sense. What policymakers don't understand is that Israel has engaged in blockades around the Gaza Strip and attempted to get rid of the population in the Gaza Strip long before Hamas was even established as a party. But with Hamas's takeover of the Gaza Strip, this created a perfect fig leaf for Israel to maintain the Gaza Strip as a separate strip of land. And to do that, it had to acquiesce and in some ways even enable Hamas to maintain its position as a governing authority there. And this also further